Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
This was Michelle Roberts, who's head of the NBA Players Association, on HBO's Real Sports, talking about the possibility of the NBA returning this year.
I'll give you a six. It was probably an eight last week. I've gotten some recent concerns expressed by players now that babies, children have been infected, so heightened concerns have come into the conversation. So I'd say a six.
Yeah, it's one of the most bizarre answers I've ever heard from somebody who's in a leadership perspective. The idea that she would be at an eight last week, and now because there are new concerns over somebody's family, that she, again, this is out of 10, the idea would take it down several notches to a six, really feels like she's being overreactive. And, oh yeah, by the way, she doesn't need to necessarily support what she's saying with her actual actions, but it's this idea of what image do you want to put off? How do you want to be perceived? Hey, look, here's the reality to it. They're going to play. You might not like it. You got players that might not like it. You got owners that might not like it. You got referees that might not like it. You might not like it as a consumer. Not everybody is going to like it. That's the way in which it works. But they are going to play. It is going to happen. It's going to happen. And so I'm not saying you got to get on board with something you don't like, but so much of this is about the messaging. I don't know. I'm like at a six now. A six? You got facilities opened up. You got plans being made. Because you may be on the right side of history, but no one's going to look back at that. Hey, look, I'm at a 9 in terms of desire to have these guys, or a 10 in terms of wanting them to be on the floor. We just want to make sure everybody's safe, everything's right, everybody's taken care of. There's some details that have to work out. But in terms of getting back on the floor, like, man, we want to bring a little mental health relief to so many of our basketball fans, not only nationwide, but worldwide. That's the message from the Players Association. Instead, you're being, frankly, a nuisance. You just have all the star players, or most of the star players, less James Harden, get on a call and say, hey, we got to get back and play some basketball. Now you got the head of the NBAPA like, well, I was at 8, but now I'm at a 6 because a couple kids got sick. And look, I'm not trying to be heartless. I'm not denying the level of damage that has been done and the lives that have been lost. But like, look, there's just a reality to them. You got to get back to work. You got to get back to work. Unless your stance is, hey, I am not letting my players play unless there's a vaccine. If you do that, then you have to say, well, we probably aren't going to play in the fall and winter of 2020 either. But I believe that there are, as we continue to get pushback on some plans, this from Kevin O'Connor of The Ringer. The 16 current playoff teams would qualify for the group stage, plus four teams with the next best records. That'd be Trailblazers, Pelicans, Kings, Spurs. The remaining 10 teams would be done for the season. The survey sent to each general manager noted that the tiers would first be created by using the regular season standings to ensure competitive balance between the two groups. For example, 20 teams could be allocated into 5 tiers, right? You got Bucks, Lakers, Raptors, Clippers on tier 1, tier 2, Celtics, Nuggets, Jazz, Heat, tier 3, Thunder, Rockets, Pacers, Sixers, tier 4, Mavericks, Grizzlies, Nets, Magic, tier 5, Blazers, Pelicans, Kings, Spurs. Groups could be randomly drawn, one team from each tier in each group. This is what I've been saying for 2 months now. Pool play and then pool play into a tournament. Right? Pool play and pool play into a tournament. And once they get into the tournament, if they want to go 7 games, they want to give buys, you got to get some real games in. Can't just have exhibition games into playoffs. That wouldn't make sense. And they're getting close to dotting the I's and crossing the T's and getting this thing done. Except for you got the head of the NBAPA saying, and I don't know how dated the interview actually was. It's one of the problems with real sports is it's not like they're live interviews, but it could have been done the day before. But you have her saying, I'm at like a six. A six? What rock are you living under? I understand. I listen, if you're in New York, your perspective is different than in Florida, in Texas. If you're in California, your perspective is different. I live in a part of Southern California where you have people that have protested closing of the beach going back a couple weeks ago. And I thought that was one of the dumber things ever done. Not because it's not your right to protest, but twofold. One, when people protested, they didn't maintain social distancing, right? You're trying to show the government, hey, we're mature enough. If you just open the beaches, we'll maintain social distancing. All right, we'll do it in your protest. Secondly, why are you protesting the beach? Protest something that really matters. Businesses, small and large. And then, of course, you're going to have to figure out, as businesses come back online, what do you do with all these kids that don't have summer camp? And right now, even if you're still in school, are not actually in school. Like, there's a litany of problems to work through. But opening the beaches doesn't really help much. Doesn't really help much. But look, I hate to break to you. The world is opening up. The world is learning. And we were never considering being shut down for the summer. It was never really a consideration. It was how long till we had to flatten the curve. Did we open up too quickly? Time will tell. But Michelle Roberts is supposed to be the most educated person on this. She's supposed to be the one providing guidance to players, not overreacting to players, giving them her opinion. That ain't how it works. That's not leadership. But now look, I think the reason that so much of the NBA that we don't understand is there's parts of these TV deals, parts of the revenue deals. Like, do I really want to send the Blazers, you know, get the Blazers or the Kings? Do I want to send the Kings, you know, have them open up the facility, have them work out, send them down to Orlando, have them go through training camp and get in shape and get ready and play a couple exhibition games, then play five games, only then to fly home to Sacramento? Like, right? If you're the owner of the Kings, you're like, why would I do that? I'm just losing money. And the answer has to be, and they got to provide inventory for TV and radio deals so that they don't completely lose every amount of revenue for this season and have to write checks. Like, that's just not something that is a sustainable model. Can't stay closed down forever. Now, does that mean you want to include everybody? No, there's a limit to it. And you're going to have to find a way to navigate. You have to navigate these TV deals because, you know, like the Warriors with their home games on their NBC affiliate. What do you do there? Who's going to cut that check? The Warriors don't want to play. The league's going to acquiesce and not have them play, but they're still several games short of fulfilling their need for their local regional sports network, right? Like, this actually happens. This is part of the discussion. So there's lots of things that we don't truly understand. And maybe Michelle Roberts wants to, this is the same with the MLBPA. The only message you should be getting from the Players Association is, we want to play. Our guys cannot wait to play. We need to be as safe as possible, and we need to not set ourselves back so bad financially that it's used against us in our next CBA. But the NBA CBA is locked in. The new deal is done, signed, delivered. This is simply about a lack of true quality leadership and vision to get this thing done. That train is leaving the station. Okay, it has been at the station for the last 2 months. It is leaving the station. Now, you can decide where you want to sit on it, but running to catch that train and being in the caboose, fine. But that's what's going to end up happening if you don't get on board. I feel like we're hearing this narrative from some people that in an effort to negotiate in public, you end up sounding like the most obtuse person on earth. Well, we're at about a six. Well, players are already back at the facilities working out. The best players have already had a call saying they want to come back and play. The league's trying to figure out exactly how they want to format it, and you're at like a six? Well, people are having pool parties in the Ozarks, which look like Vegas. But we got a six on returning in the NBA season. Kidding? That the message you want to send? You are cautiously pessimistic instead of cautiously optimistic. That's how you need to. We want to be as smart as possible, as safe as possible, and we want to play basketball if it's possible. I'm at like a 9 or a 10. All we got to do is figure out smart logistics. You do that, and no one will ever do what I'm doing, which is say, boy, you really sound like a dope. And she's not. She's obviously a bright woman. She wouldn't have been as accomplished as she is if she's not very bright. But it's, to me, the nature of being overreactive. One or two players calling you and saying, hey, I don't get this. Like, you just need to be sound, provide balance, be motherly, fatherly, grandfatherly, grandmotherly, whatever. And just say, look, I get it. Give me your list of concerns. We will figure it out together. You are a basketball player. Your house, your cars, your life is paid for by basketball. We want to keep this thing going.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Okay, let's welcome in Jason Stark, who, of course, has covered baseball forever and does a great job of it over there at The Athletic. All right, so hope is pretty high that the NBA will return. Where do you believe we are on baseball?
All right. Well, Doug, I try to be an optimistic person, and people keep asking me if I'm optimistic there'll be a deal. After what we've seen, I don't know how anybody could use a word like optimism to describe this. But the other thing I always try to say is I'm also a realistic person, and a realistic person would look at the other sports and say the NHL is going to play, the NBA is obviously going to figure it out, the NFL is going to play. How can baseball not play? How could any group of people decide that's a good idea? It is not a good idea. It's a disastrous idea. And so I keep thinking in a week or so, it will become clear to everyone they can't let that happen. That's my one hope right now.
Yeah, I don't know how they can not play.
That's right.
I don't know how they can. I don't know. Like, you have to start with the premise of you're going to play and let's figure out how we do it. And I don't think it helps that, you know, Korean baseball is on TV. It's like, well, they figured it out. Why can't we figure it out? I think these things are working against them. Even if, and the MLBPA has every right, especially with the pending CBA talks that I'm sure are going to be tenuous. And the Players Association putting, you know, the players putting Tony Clark on notice because no one's happy with the previous deal. Like, I understand all of that. But you have to start with the premise of we're going to play and how we're going to work it out. Otherwise, you send a message to your consumer that regardless of how concerned you are with health and safety, that it's all about money and not about, you know, them having the entertainment value, especially during this stressful time. And for baseball especially, it could be a great time for them to be interesting and much more front page news. And the more they delay and the more they fight over things, the more it allows any national consumer to think the worst, not the best.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think they've already sent that message, unfortunately. I wish this could have been done quietly. I wish that I covered a sport like the NBA, where they could just say to Adam Silver, we all trust you, figure it out. I wish that if neither of those things were going to happen, this had started with some statement that these are extraordinary times. They require mutual sacrifice, so we need to find a way to do this. None of that has happened. And so we are where we've always been. I've seen this movie a million times. I don't know why every baseball negotiation has to start this way, but they do. I keep clinging to this hope that they don't all end this way. They start looking like a train wreck, and then for the last 25 years, they have always figured it out. Well, they need to figure it out now.
Well, except for that one time that they didn't have the World Series, they've always figured it out.
Well, that was 25 years ago.
Right. Okay, my bad.
Let's not do that again.
No, I understand. Like, look, I'm sure Tony Clark's sitting there going, like, what would Donald Fehr do? Right? Like, Donald Fehr, perfect name for a guy in his position. And, you know, he would have said no to everything. And then, you know, eventually, you know, you feel like he'd get his way. But, you know, you're not Donald Fehr. And this is a very, this is a completely new world. And I've also read, and I don't know how the people you've talked to, I've read where one of the concerns is that with the financial losses teams are going to take, that teams will be vengeful in free agency. I don't think they'll be vengeful as much as just responsible on some level. Will they be ticked? Yeah, but I also just think there's a responsibility. Like, look, I had to lay off a bunch of people in my office because we didn't have home games. Now I got to hire back a bunch of people. The last thing I'm going to do is go and sign Mookie Betts, $35 million a year for 10 years, when I don't know what the financial impact, the ramifications are going to be. So I think there's this sense that from some Major League Baseball players, like, hey, we got to do this right. But we don't want to be forced to play because they're going to be mean to us in negotiations. When I think they got to play in order to make some sort of dollars for this year, just survive this year, get through it, and then business can be much more as usual next year.
You're exactly right. You know, they need to play for every reason, but that is definitely one of the reasons. I don't think it's going to be a great year to be a free agent, no matter what. I wouldn't. You know, Mookie's been dreaming those $400 million contract dreams. I might be time to revise that dream no matter what. But that is one more reason they have to get this done, is you've got to try to salvage the future. And, you know, I keep asking people in baseball, I don't see a middle ground, but where is it? Where can they find a way to do a deal? And increasingly, people are focused on that. You need to put in place protection for next year, protection for free agents, protection for all the players that don't have a contract for next year, which is most of them. Everybody's going to lose money this year. That's going to happen no matter how this turns out. But there have to be protections in whatever deal gets done for the group that doesn't have a contract for next year, including the big free agents and the little ones.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, so we both think, though, that they're going to play, because at the end of the day, it's just too much money, just too much money. What do you think it looks like?
What do I think the season looks like, or what do I think the deal looks like?
The season. I know the devil's in the details with the players. I don't think fans care. They just don't. They're like, are you going to put it on TV? Then I'll watch it.
Yeah. Well, first off, I mean, we keep hearing about what people refer to as the magic dates. You know, July 4th to get started again. 82 games, finishing about when you would have finished at the end of September anyway. This spring training 2.0 starting in the second week of June. I don't actually think that those dates are either magic or etched in stone. I think they're movable. I think all the numbers are changeable. I don't know how they could have a deal by June 1st. That's 5 days from now. So as they continue to push onward, trying to figure it out, it's conceivable to me that you push the start date back, and that might have an effect on how many games they play. I would hate to see under 82 games, because I don't know how you can even call that a season. But I think there is motivation to play games, period. However many you have time to play. If it's 80, if it's 60, if it's 50, if it's less than that, I think if they can figure out the details, they will play. And then I think you'll see experiments with all sorts of different rules. Universal DH, that one's almost for sure. The other ones are still in play, but I think the extra inning tiebreaker rule that they use in the minor leagues, all kinds of stuff like that will be part of this if it happens, and let's hope it does.
Yeah, the Universal DH is interesting. I love the double switch. Like, we're going to have to go RIP to the double switch. I love that. I understand that they want to make it a more offensive game. What are we doing with pitchers having bats? I do understand that. And it also creates more jobs you know, for older players that can't go out in the field. So I'm sure the MLBPA loves that, and they'll have a deeper deeper roster. What about the gameplay action? Do you think, like, I mean, will we have definitely 9-inning games? Will they try and speed it up? Are they going to try double headers? Like, what are the ideas that you still hear being bandied about?
Okay, well, the reason to play 82 games starting July 4th is you don't have to try to cram in extra games in a really tight window. So you wouldn't have to have those double headers. You wouldn't have to have 2 7-inning games or 1 9-inning game, 1 7-inning game. All those ideas have been thrown out there. But, you know, what happens if they don't get a deal done in a week and now they do have to start pushing back the date and TV doesn't want them to go into November with the postseason and they have fears about a second wave of the virus and they don't want to go that route anyway, then that stuff comes back into play. In terms of whether you have the DH permanently, that has to be negotiated. That has to be part of the CBA, unless everybody loves it at the end of this year. You know, I'll tell you, there's an idea that I wrote about. It's not my original idea, but I put it in a column over the winter, and people went crazy talking about it, debating it, and that is you have a universal DH, but the DH is only in the game as long as the starting pitcher is in the game, or you can even negotiate, if you want to use an opener, the principal pitcher, so that when that starter comes out, you still have a few innings of the kinds of decisions that people love about National League Baseball. It's a fun compromise.
It is a fun compromise. I love it. You wrote the book on the worst trades in the history of baseball. It's still one of my favorite books. I'm like, the amount of research you had to do is obscene, right? But the Mookie Betts one could be an all-timer. If he doesn't play for the Dodgers... I don't know how much of that money they'll have to pay him, but I mean, think about your Mookie, and for Mookie Betts, I just can't imagine the financial hit he takes. Well, with every passing day.
Yeah, I've checked in with the Dodgers a couple of times to ask about this possibility. They do not want to think about it. I don't blame them, but you know, this brings up another issue that I just wrote about, and that is players who decide they don't want to play. They don't feel comfortable playing. They don't feel safe, whatever it is. Rob Manfred said on CNN a week or so ago they would not force any player to play who didn't feel comfortable with playing. And, I think what they're referring to is guys with defined health risks who have diabetes or cancer survivors, that class of players. But what happens if other players, star players, decide they don't think it's worth playing if they have to give back $20 million of their salary or whatever? They might not say that. They might say it's about safety, but what are they going to do about those players? Are they going to get paid? Are they going to get service time? If Mookie Betts opts out of the season, does he still become a free agent? I think I know how the Dodgers would vote on that, right? So, like, these are all these subplots, these decisions that have to be figured out alongside the big ones that are going to be really interesting to me.
No, it's going to be really, really interesting. And, then you also have, like the Astros. Like, are they still going to be America's bad? Like, they're skating on this thing. Everything was about the Astros before the season had gotten underway. And now the least concerning thing is, did the Astros cheat their way to a World Series title?
It's so true. Remember, that was the only thing we talked about or cared about. I just talked to Dusty Baker this week. He appeared on the Starkville podcast with me and Doug Glanville, and I wrote a column about some of the stuff he talked about. And one of those things was the Astros and how playing with no fans helps them. He called it a blessing in disguise. He described the kind of hate they were getting from fans, young and old, this spring, and how difficult it was going to be to play a season dealing with that. If there's no fans in the park, they just get to go play. Like, do you think they care what we're saying on the radio? I think that's one of the teams that would be helped the absolute most, don't you?
Yeah. And crazy. And they went go from being booed everywhere to, you know, the deafening sounds of silence. Although we would be able to hear if anybody hit a trash can, much easier.
Who's going to be hitting them? They're not even going to let in the family of the other team in the park, right?
Jason, great stuff. Keep up the good work, and hopefully we'll be talking real baseball very, very soon.
That sounds good. Great to talk to you, man. Be well.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Let's welcome in Rob Parker, who, of course, has a new book, Tales of Rob Parker's Urinating Mouse, a collection of tweets. Is that a real book?
It's a real book, Doug. It's actually a lot fun. It's a fun read on Amazon.com. It's fun.
Of course, this comes from Rob Parker tweeting about it's so quiet you could hear a mouse urinating wherever something goes bad. What's your opinion of, and I know, look, I know you have an affinity for Isaiah Thomas. You covered him when you worked for a long time in Detroit, a place you still call kind of your home away from your New York home where you grew up. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on the revelation, not revelation to most people, but that Jordan lied in the documentary and was not honest about keeping Isaiah off the dream team.
This is the part I don't understand. Is Michael Jordan is that guy. You know this, Doug. He's nobody else. You can go and say, well, you know, Larry Bird didn't like him. Magic didn't like him. There was only one guy who could keep Isaiah off that team, and that was Michael Jordan. So I don't understand why in calling out Scottie Pippen in the documentary, he was selfish when he got surgery. Hey, Horace Grant was a rat. He gave sports writer Sam Smith all the information for the Jordan Rules book. He said all this on camera. He called Isaiah an a-hole on camera. So why is he so coy and was so afraid to just own up to it, be the boss? It's a punk move not to own up to it, Doug, and say, you know what? I didn't want Isaiah to play. Here's the reasons why. And the Dream Team had a pick. Me or him, and they picked me. I'd have more respect if he said that than, you know, well, if you want to put it on me, go ahead, put it on me. And then the tape to come out, everybody knows that's how it went down. Everybody, you know that.
No, but the tape that came out said that Chuck Daly didn't want him on the team either, right? So
yeah, but
he's
Chuck
willing
Daly-
to accept, but hold on, he's willing to accept some sort of responsibility. But I also think that, you know, look, if he says, here's the way it really went down. Magic didn't like him. Bird didn't like him. Chuck Daly's own coach didn't want him on the team. Like, come on, man. I'm not the only dude. And yeah, I didn't want him there. Instead, he made it pretty obvious, and he kind of, as you said, passively accepted responsibility.
Only problem I have here is, I mean, I know everybody loves to throw Chuck Daly out there. He's passed. He can't answer for himself. But I'm going to say this. Jack McCloskey was also the general manager of the Dream Team, who happened to be the Pistons general manager at the time. He resigned his post after he realized what was going to happen to Isaiah because it was wrong. And Doug, you know this, I know it. We all work with people we don't like, we'd never have a meal with, we'd never invite to your home. But it doesn't mean that you can't work together on something that was earned. Isaiah, a top 50 player of all time. Isaiah, a Hall of Famer. Isaiah was on the Olympic team in 1980 that boycotted because of Russia back then, so he didn't play in that one. This is a guy who earned his way on that team, and I'm not buying a team chemistry argument either, because I'm sorry, to beat Angola by 40 points, they could have put any squad together. Isaiah deserved to be on that team, and just Jordan should fess up to it. That's all.
You're actually kind of contradicting yourself there, Rob.
I'm not.
Right? No, look, if you say anybody could have beaten them, I agree. But it was about them getting along. It was about, you know, and I'm sure, and look, Chuck Daly may not have not wanted Isaiah because he knew it would upset Jordan and Bird and Magic. And that could be part of Chuck going like, I know that's not going to work, so let's just not go there. And by the way, Jack McCallum, when I interviewed him yesterday for my All Ball podcast, he did not say that's why McCloskey resigned. That's not what happened. That he said he didn't think he belonged on the team either.
That's not. Well, he was on my show on The Odd Couple, and he said that his knowledge of it was a little fuzzy and not as clear as mine. Jack McCloskey resigned in protest over Isaiah.
Listen, I take it as, here's how I took it. Jordan said it right. Winning has a price. It does, right? And for Bird, it was his body. His body broke down. For Jordan, it was, you know, he was not able to have the normal relationships. He became this superstar. He became this super-driven guy to win more, 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 more. He won. He got the taste of blood, and that was the only thing that he could search for, is more victims of his venom. For Isaiah, the way they won, the way they had to be successful was being the baddest badasses on the block, right? And they were. And they intimidated much of the league. And they, for 2 years, they were champions, and they were the bad boys. But winning has its price. And for that, for the bridges that he burned, and he burned a lot of them, the price was the dream team. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah, I just don't follow that, because Tim Duncan didn't have to win that way. Tim Duncan is a Ray Allen miracle three away from being 6-0 like Michael Jordan during his career. He wore flip-flops and was the nicest guy on the block. Everybody's different, Doug. I don't believe that Michael Jordan's way is the only way to win. Tim Duncan was able to win in the NBA being totally different from every other guy who played basketball in that league. It's different ways for different people. That's what he chose. And I don't have an issue. He's the greatest player I ever saw. I covered Michael Jordan. I was covering the NBA back during those years. I was in Cleveland for that shot against Craig Elo. I was in Detroit for the migraine game. I was around a lot, but I'm still saying, all I'm saying is for Michael to own up to it. I'm not saying that there weren't other people that had issues with Isaiah, but I don't believe Larry Bird would have not played on the Dream Team if Isaiah was on it. I don't believe that Scottie Pippen would have said, oh, I'm out, or any other player. This was about Michael Jordan, and just call it what it is.
Yeah, and listen, I'm a little surprised that he didn't. I'm more than surprised he didn't step up and just go, yeah, I didn't want him on the team. Nobody liked him. I didn't like him. I didn't want him on the team. I don't know why. I don't know why he didn't do it. He did the passive aggressive. You want to blame me, whatever. It was never brought up to my. You know, his name was never brought up, and then obviously there's tape of him having it brought up to him. Rob Parker, our guest in the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. The podcast is called Inside the Parker. Why won't baseball players just suck it up and go back to work?
Because that's not how they're made, and I get it. They've sacrificed for a long time. They fought the owners through collusion. Do you remember that, when the owners colluded against them? There's just been a long history of mistrust. I will say this. There's been 26 years of labor peace in baseball, so I'm not going to bash either side. I get it. These are uncharted waters. The players don't want to just sign up and go, oh, yeah, we'll do whatever it takes, and sign up for something that they're not going to be happy with. And the owners have to do. I'm not knocking the owners. It's not a regular year. No fans, no parking, no concessions, no merchandise at stadium. That's a lot of money that's going to be lost. They'll figure it out. And they have time to get there so that we can have baseball come July 4th. I don't believe either side wants no baseball for 18 months. It would damage the game more, Doug, than 1994 when we didn't have a World Series.
Yeah, no, listen, if I'm them, I do anything I can to get back out in the field and extend. Take a listen to what Jason Stark, who you and I have worked with before, now works for, yes, the Athletic, what he had to say about what the players are looking at.
I don't think it's going to be a great year to be a free agent, no matter what. You know, Mookie's been dreaming those $400 million contract dreams. It might be time to revise that dream, but that is one more reason they have to get this done, is you've got to try to salvage the future. You need to put in place protection for next year, protection for free agents, protection for all the players that don't have a contract for next year, which is most of them. Everybody's going to lose money this year, but there have to be protections in whatever deal gets done for the group that doesn't have a contract for next year, including the big free agents and the little ones.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, it's interesting.
He's spot
it's like
on. He's spot
they're,
on.
They're there. Trying to protect themselves against, for their next CBA. Right. On the other hand, by protecting themselves, you could actually end up hurting yourselves even more.
No doubt about it. That's why it's very, very important for baseball and for the players' union, because if you damage the game here, there will be no Mookie Betts $400 million contract when he's a free agent with the Dodgers. You know what I mean? So yeah. You could kiss all that goodbye, and you've seen the riches. Baseball's an $11 billion business. Doug, you know this. On television, the biggest moneymaker are live events. Everybody else can watch all the other stuff whenever they want, binge watch, right? We still, the only appointment television we have is sports on television. That's why baseball still makes so much money.
Rob Parker, our guest on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. What do you think about the NBA not coming back till late July and playing games in August and September?
I'm calling it the Mickey Mouse Championship in Orlando. I don't know. I guess they got to make sure that people are right, Doug. You've played basketball on a high level. Get people back. It's been a 2 or 3 month layoff, right? It'll wind up being something like that. So I guess you can't rush people back. You have a chance of people getting injured. And I agree with them about just going straight to the playoffs. I don't think playing the last 7 or 8 regular season games kind of in that format and bringing all the teams together, teams that are out of it, why even bother? I think you should just go with your 16 playoff teams and try to play it as close to the situations that you've always had, the best out of 7, so that you have a legitimate championship. You don't want to, you know, monkey with it too much, Doug, so that people look at it sideways and say, well, they won the championship, but that was kind of flaky, right? Or that wasn't real, or they didn't really go through the same test that all the other champions went through. So that's the hard part, is making sure that you don't delegitimize it.
Awesome stuff. Rob Parker, check him out on The Odd Couple. That show starts at 7 Eastern, 4 o'clock Pacific. And, of course, you need to buy his new book, Tales of Rob Parker's Urinating Mouse, a collection of tweets. The one and only Rob Parker. Rob, great stuff, man.
All right, Doug. Appreciate it, as always, bud.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
From Peter King, the reason the Sky Judge got knocked down, okay, and if you're just joining us, you might have heard this from Dan Beyer, the Sky Judge, which we saw in the XFL, never even really went to a vote. The problems are, one, unintended consequence. What if a coach throws a challenge flag and the official in the booth is telling the ref on field to change the call? Two, there aren't 17 qualified people. I call BS on that. Three, the time frame to make a call is so condensed, Sky Judge may not see the replay in time. And look, the best idea for the new season regarding the Sky Judge concept is to allow the free flow of info from replay official to ref on the field. Peter King says he's been told by some replay officials that they already do that, even though they're not supposed to. The idea is this: the Sky Judge actually exists anyway. It's just there's no official Sky Judge. I do think that we continue to try and perfect something that's imperfect, which is officiating, which is, you know, what's the least reliable form of testimony? It's eyewitness testimony, right? You remember that from my cousin Vinny. You remember my cousin Vinny there, Ramos? Ramos was like, yeah. My cousin Vinny is...
I'm a big fan of Marissa Tomei.
Right. Everybody knows about Marissa Tomei, like Marissa Tomei, and my biological clock is ticking, and the two Utes. But one of the big parts of it is that they were misidentified because we were using eyewitness testimony, which isn't nearly as reliable as circumstantial evidence. You know, scientific evidence is the most reliable, not perfect, but much more reliable than eyewitness testimony. And so we're trying to make eyewitness testimony or eyewitnesses the most accurate. And they're not. Nor will they ever be. It's an impossible task. So I look at this thing and I think I understand why there's no Sky Judge. I don't think the Sky Judge needs to intercede. And I do think you can empower the replay official to act as though they're the Sky Judge anyway without having the official title. You know, the problem with the unintended consequences is we don't have enough data to know if that's what would happen. And I think because the XFL was so shortened, we didn't really have a good sense of it.